On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are, a minute past the hour, a new week begins. It is Monday, the 13th day of January, 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. However, it is presently unavailable. We kind of forgot the dues for the domain name. Not to worry, though, that is being remedied even as we speak. John Fox has provided the relevant data to Ben Birch, who in turn will get it fired back up again post-haste. So our apologies in that regard. It's more in Monday, without a doubt. We've got a bunch of them, but well, you'll forgive me, I hope, if my focus remains the poisoning of the water supply of 300,000 people, American citizens, even. I know. Most folks in the United States don't think about people living in Appalachia as being real, live, honest to Jesus. American citizens, but they really are, I promise. I mean, when we have us a war, no state more than West Virginia sends its young to go out and be butchered and slaughtered. We have given more to the wars of this country than on a per capita basis than any state in the Union. Pretty impressive, huh? But for the most part, that's all we're really good for, is getting shot at, or poisoned, or blasted, or bombed, or. And God knows, yesterday, on the for-profit media Sunday Babble Fest, we were not good enough to even rate a mention. Nothing. Not over on Meet the Prestitutes. Not on Face the Prestitutes. Not on This Prestitute with George Snuffleupagus. Surely not on Radio TV Rwanda. Nowhere. Absolutely nowhere. 300,000 human beings without access to a clean supply of water. And no. We didn't count. I guess I understand. You gotta remember, these are the for-profit media, and they are supported by some of the very same kinds of folks who poisoned the Elk River. I mean, corporate America. Uh-huh. But there's good news. But there's also a lot to catch up on. I mean, you want to talk about morans this year, Moran Monday? Let's talk about the fact that the incorporator of the Orwellianly named Freedom Industries was a convicted coke dealer. No, really. And I'm not talking about some dude who was standing there in his polyester leisure suit and his stacked heels back in the disco days, selling a gram here and there that was being snorted up back in the bathroom while music thumped away at 138 beats per minute. Oh, no. No, no. Carl Kennedy Incorporated, as according to the documents in the West Virginia Secretary of State's office, Carl Kennedy Incorporated Freedom Industries. Freedom Industries. And he did so not before, but after having been popped for selling somewhere between 10 and 12 ounces of cocaine. For those of you unfamiliar with Bolivian marching powder, 10 to 12 ounces of cocaine is a whole lot of cocaine. I mean, 12, yeah, 3/4 of a pound of cocaine. I mean, that could have, during his salad days, 3/4 of a pound of cocaine could have kept George W. Bush going for a week. And then he pled guilty to, well, being a tax cheat who didn't, he was doing the accounting work for the company, and he was withholding monies for taxes and then, well, not exactly paying them to the government. No, no. No, there was a huge scandal in Charleston, West Virginia back in the day, and it had to do with a Charleston mayor by the name of Mike Rourke. No, not Howard Rourke from A. and Rand, Mike Rourke. And apparently this was the cat whose cocaine dealings took down Mike Rourke. A lot of cocaine. It also turns out that he and his buddy, Denny Farrell, went way back to, they were college buddies at West Virginia Tech, which is an engineering school, just down the mountain from where I am. They became buddies there, and they opened a bar in Montgomery. That was pretty much the sum total and extent of their experience running a business before, somehow or another, they found enough money to buy an old Pennzoil tank farm a couple of miles up the Elk River in Charleston, West Virginia, which they then converted into a facility which would provide chemicals to the coal industry necessary in the coal cleaning process. That was Freedom Industries. Which begs a couple of questions, really. One, let's say you've got a conviction for dealing 10 or 12 ounces of cocaine. And you want to open a bar. Well, apparently they managed to do that, or maybe they did that before the cocaine bust. I'm not entirely sure. But I would imagine it's probably okay to open a bar after your cocaine bust, maybe. I don't know. I've never tried to open a bar, so I don't know if there's a box on there to check, have you been convicted of a felony? But what is apparent in this process is that when one seeks to open a facility that will hold multiple hundreds of thousands, if not millions of gallons, of toxins, poisons, chemicals, what have you, within a mile and a half of an entire region's water supply, there ain't no box that says, have you been convicted of a felony? Because he would have had to check it not once, but twice. Sorry, no. And that is the miracle of America, where a fella who's made some mistakes in life, hustling 3/4 of a pound of cocaine, and, well, if he's hustled 3/4 of a pound of cocaine, how much cocaine did he really hustle? Yeah. how much coke would a coke whore snort if a coke whore could snort coke, right?
Racing.
But nobody was apparently no one was disturbed by that. Not bothered in the least. Ah, well, you know, so he got pop dealing coke. I mean, why shouldn't he be able to participate in the free market miracle that is West Virginia's coal-fired economy? Oh, by the way, thanks very much to Sparky. The chat room is available to you until we get the domain issue sorted out. And if you will go to my Facebook page, Bob Kincaid, just spelled that way, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, on Facebook, if you'll go there, Sparky is posting the link, the back door, as it were, to the chat room so folks can get in there. Do feel free to avail yourself of that. So I'm kind of at a loss. I don't know how, although in this state apparently anything is possible, I don't know how a convicted coke dealer gets to incorporate a toxic chemical company. I think I liked him, but I'll be honest with you, I think I liked him better as a coke dealer. When you're a coke dealer, you can only screw up a few people's lives at a time, as opposed to, you know, 300,000. But to be fair, the coke dealer was not involved when the disaster went down. He had had a lengthy and nasty bankruptcy proceeding that finally cleared, I think, back in 2012. And that left a little handful of people, primarily a guy named Denny Farrell, in charge of Freedom Industries and their freedom-loving toxins, until December the 31st of this past year, 2013, at which point everything was dissolved and then reconstituted in the new year as a conglomerate between Etowah Terminal, Poca Blending, some outfit called Crete Industries out of Delaware. And the next thing you know, you wind up with a dude standing in front of a camera on Friday evening doing his best BP impression. I mean, this was truly something. They had lain low until Friday, and you can understand why they would, being as how they had not said a word while a whole bunch of people's water supply got absolutely poisoned. But then suddenly on Friday evening, Gary Southern, identified as the president of Freedom Industries, shows up on a TV station in West Virginia. This was the exchange.
Look, guys, it has been an extremely long day. I'm having a hard trouble talking at the moment. I would appreciate it if we could wrap this thing up. I will...
We actually have a lot of questions, and it's been a long day for a lot of people who don't have water. So can you give us an exact timeline as to how this all happened? The DEP was saying earlier today, as early as 8:15 yesterday morning, they were getting reports, and that you all did not call it in until 12 noon. The DEP was already here at 11:15. So what's the timeline on all this?
We were aware of the leaking storage tank around 10:30. We load tank trucks of this material on a regular basis, and occasionally we've had reports of an odor previously. So we were first aware of any material being spilled at 10:30 yesterday.
Did you notice we've had reports of an odor previously? How about that? Interesting, isn't it? Help me here. We have an international audience. I can tell you with a fair degree of authority that what you're hearing there is not your typical Logan County, Fayette County, Kanawha County, Boone County, Raleigh County, Roane County, Clay County, Jackson County, Mingo County, Cabell County, Wayne County accent. What's, who, where is, huh? How does this guy, Gary Southern, get to have yay or nay, life or death, over the water supply of 300,000 people? And the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection is clueless. I'm kind of stumped here. Now, the visual on this is every bit as good as the audio is. The audio, of course, just, my throat is tired and it's been a long day. That's when, on camera, in front of 300,000 people eagerly watching, waiting, trying to find out if they've been poisoned, he lifts an ice-cold bottle of water to his lips and takes a big old drink. And you can even see the brand name of the water on the water bottle. You can see the glistening droplets of condensation from where it has been kept ice cold for Gary Southern's convenience.
Could it have been earlier than yesterday? Because we've also received reports into our newsroom that it was as early as Wednesday, possibly Tuesday, people were starting to smell this in the area.
We have no information on that.
None at all. Are clueless. All we do is cash the checks. Right. And took a second swig off of his water bottle for good measure. This was stunning when it happened, and frankly has not stopped being stunning since. Now, this was the putting him in front of the camera was the work of a PR firm called Charles Ryan Associates, which is the biggest PR outfit in Charleston, West Virginia, and I think the biggest PR outfit in the state. And frankly, they'll work for anybody. Morals and ethics are not real high on the priority list of Charles Ryan Associates. Here's how bad it is. Charles Ryan Associates was hired by Freedom Industries to do damage control. Okay? By Saturday, it was being announced that Charles Ryan Associates had fired Freedom Industries and not vice versa. Now, when you're in the PR business, especially crisis management, your job is to put as good a face on a rotten situation as you possibly can. Let's hear the end of this little exchange.
Systems in place to alert you of a leak at your facility other than a smell?
At this moment in time, I think that's all we have time for. So thanks for coming. Thanks for
what, we have more questions. Hey. No, we're not done.
We're not done.
No. Anyone else have any other questions?
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people had other questions. I do kind of like the little for-profit media reporter when she says, hey, we're not done. You're not done? Ron and Raleigh noting, hey, Bob, I don't think this old boy is from around there. Sounds to me be an Irish expatriate. I wasn't sure, Ron. I thought he was, it sounded a little Scots. So, like I said, Freedom Industries wound up getting fired by Charles Ryan Associates because there are some things up with which Charles Ryan and Associates will not put. But by the same token, consider the text of the, oh my God, they finally said something late on Friday press release that Charles Ryan and Associates put out. No funny voices. no over the top anything, just straight. I'm just going to read this straight. Since the discovery of the leak, safety for residents in Kanawha and surrounding counties has been Freedom Industries' first priority. An associate or an executive or a somebody, a flack, a hack, at Charles Ryan Associates actually wrote that sentence. Welcome to Fun with Context. 300,000 people are without water. 300,000 people are without water because your client poisoned the water. I'm just making a suggestion here to future PR hacks and flacks out there. Starting the press release with, since the discovery of the leak, safety for residents in Kanawha and surrounding counties has been Freedom Industries' first priority. Because implicit in that statement is, before the discovery of the leak, we didn't give a flying F at a rolling donut and were just cashing the checks. Every time the truck pulled up and got the crap poured in it to go off to some coal preparation plant in some forgotten holler of southern West Virginia, we didn't give a good old-fashioned damn about the safety of the people in Kanawha County or the Kanawha Valley or the people or people who drink water from the public water supply above which they existed 1.5 miles. No. Prior to that, didn't give a damn. But since the leak, well, suddenly we care about the safety of people in the Kanawha Valley. Ooh-wee. And it only got worse and weirder over the weekend as suddenly people became more interested in Freedom Industries than perhaps Freedom Industries had ever hoped anyone would be. We found out, for instance, that Freedom Industries also sells a chemical manufactured by Georgia Pacific Chemical LLC, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of, anybody? Koch Industries. You just knew you would find the sleazy, filthy Koch brothers in here somewhere. This particular chemical, on the other hand, is manufactured by the publicly traded Eastman Company. So far, so good. Jim just boils it down via an email. A known felon and tax evader being given a business license of this type, who would do such a thing? My Lord. Who would do such a thing? West Virginia would do such a thing. Because West Virginia, remember, the moment that he entered office back, and I'm trying to forget the date, and I've managed to successfully do so, back when he first entered office, Joe Manchin declared as governor that the new motto was, and he even tried to put it on the signs coming into West Virginia on all the highways, "Welcome to West Virginia, open for business." Now, for years, that sign had said, "Welcome to wild, wonderful West Virginia." Joe Manchin wanted it to be open for business. And man, it was. Hell, it was so open for business that a convicted coke dealer and tax cheat could incorporate a company that company could go on to poison the water supply of 300,000 people. Now, our buddy Luta has just noticed something about the convicted coke dealer who incorporated Freedom Industries. And it's something that occurred to me earlier in the weekend, too. The minute that I read this guy was a convicted coke dealer, I immediately knew he was white. Because if he'd been a person of darker hued skin, he would still be pulling prison time. And that's along the lines of what Luda says. Imagine if instead of being a white college grad, he was a black or brown Southern man, or a brown Southern man convicted of selling crack or weed, plus crack dealers were sent to prison at 1,000 times greater rate than their white powder coke dealing counterparts. I wonder, says Luda. Wonder no more. That's exactly the fact. But this guy was out of the picture as of 2012 at the latest, Mr. Kennedy. He was at one time married to a woman, because we don't allow any other kind of marriage here in this state. That's a different issue. He was married to a woman who then went on to marry his bar, or be the girlfriend of his bar-owning buddy. She's the one who put out on her Facebook page that she sure would appreciate a little bit of empathy. This is hard on everybody. Then the pictures came out of she and her boyfriend, Denny, laughing it up at Bike Week, having a high old time in various and sundry different bars. There was even a picture of Denny in the stocks somewhere. And I was thinking, wonder where they are. Can we get him again? But anyway, she posted on her Facebook page that, we would appreciate, I know people don't want to give sympathy, but some empathy would be nice. I brushed my teeth with and showered with that water this morning. And the boys at the plant, they made coffee with it, but they're okay. In other words, shut the up, you whining hillbillies. And more stuff kept coming out, and more stuff kept coming out. The West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection kept saying, "Hey, it wasn't us. You know, we weren't even required to inspect this place. We had no idea it even existed until they realized that they'd known it existed since 2008." Oops. Well, we still didn't have to. They filed their forms. We didn't have to inspect anything. What's there to inspect? It's just a holding facility. Right, right. Even that wasn't the end of it. Because then we found out that 3 years ago, this very month, 3 years ago, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, Colocrat, was presented with a report and a plan. Because, see, we had another chemical disaster. Well, it was a near disaster. Gosh, only a couple of people died. We have a Bayer Industries plant a few years ago. We had a Bayer Industries plant down the river at a place called Institute, right next to West Virginia's, of course, historically black university. Because they damn sure wouldn't cite that plant next to West Virginia's historically white private college. But down at Institute, West Virginia, there was a plant owned. It had been owned by a successor of succession of companies. But at the time of the problem, it belonged to Bayer Industries. Yes, that Bayer. And they had a little fire, and the little fire killed a couple of folks. And it just so happened that they had on site a little something-something called methyl isocyanate, MIC. Methyl isocyanate, for those of you who don't remember, is the substance that got loose at a Union Carbide plant in a little village in India called Bhopal. You remember Bhopal. Lots of death, lots of misery. Lots of not being held responsible. Yeah, that Bhopal. Well, they had the same stuff in Institute, and enough of it to kill every single person in the Kanawha Valley. Well, after that incident, a board of experts came in and looked at the disaster, and then prepared a report, which was submitted to the state of West Virginia and Kanawha County. That was geared toward putting this kind of potential harm in the past so that it couldn't happen in the future. And in point of fact, because I know a lot of our Horn family members are familiar with the place, and some of them actually live there. Hi, Richard. The plan that was handed to the state of West Virginia was based on the emergency response plan that is in effect, even as we speak, in Contra Costa County, California. That was January 2011. By June 2011, with the Earl Ray Tomlin gubernatorial administration and the elected members of West Virginia's congressional delegation in full furor over what that one was doing to our coal industry, you may recall a phrase called the Obama War on Coal. You may recall ads. Hell, they ran all over. You couldn't look at CNN.com without seeing a war on coal or a clean coal ad or something equally disgusting. And so it was that by June of 2011, the Earl Ray Tomlin administration, which was absolutely convinced that our business was being regulated right out of existence, and they was a killing jobs. That's JAWBBBBBBBZZZZZ jobs. Told the advisory board, which had come up with the plan, to stuff it. When in fact, that plan very likely may have prevented something like this present disaster from even happening. Earl Ray Tomlin has yet to respond to any question being put forward about, well, why he did that. 'Cause regulations kill jobs! Wonder how many jobs got... Yeah. Still people can't go back to work. I happened to be in Charleston over the weekend. It was creepy. We had to go into the mall down there. And it was like something out of a zombie apocalypse video game. Ordinarily on a Saturday, that at one point in time, the Charleston Town Center was the largest mall in an interior city setting in the country. It has since been surpassed. But it was it's a big one. It's no Mall of America, but it's a pretty big mall. And it was all lit up, but there was almost no one in it. Ordinarily, it would have been hustling and bustling on a Saturday. So that's some of it. Not all of it, but some of it. And, of course, in the meantime, my friends and I have been working to try to explain that, yes, that stuff spilled into the river, but that stuff has also been deliberately transported into mountaintop removal communities and coal mining communities on a routine basis. And nobody there has ever been told what's being used. whether it's poison, not poison. You get the idea. But now comes the good news. And the good news is this. Relying on some pretty dodgy pseudoscience, the state of West Virginia and West Virginia American Water Company have declared that the safe level for consumption of methyl cyclohexane methanol, MCHM, is one part per million or less. Well, apparently that one part per million or less threshold was reached sometime this afternoon. And the word went out that West Virginia American Water, a wholly owned subsidiary of American Water, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of another holding company, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of another overarching corporation, was going to begin flushing its lines and transporting fresh water, clean water, cool water. Now, the science behind this, like I said, is a mite dodgy. What I mean by that? Well, the folks over at Environmental Defense Fund took a long look at methyl cyclohexane methanol. And with regard to the one part per million threshold, Richard Dennison, Ph.D., senior scientist with the Environmental Defense Fund, wrote, "The science behind this standard remains unclear. Based on what we do know, there are good reasons to believe that officials are overlooking significant health risks." Now, more than 150 people have been seen in hospitals over the last few days. 10 were admitted for longer-term stays and are hospitalized. No one has been reported dead yet. Mothers have not been able to make mixed formula for their babies. No one's been able to bathe. No one's been able to get a drink of water out of the tap. Richard Dennison, Dr. Dennison, writes, "We know that the manufacturer's material safety data sheet that officials say they are using as their primary source lacks any information about chronic health impacts. The major federal databases we consulted suggest such data simply do not exist for this chemical." Why not? Ask the Republicans in Washington and various and sundry other states who have stalled an attempt to catalog the toxins that are routinely used in and around human populations in this country. But anyway, it also appears, says Dr. Dennison, that officials made significant leaps in their calculation of a safe exposure level. Oh, there's leaping. Including assumptions, oh dear, assumptions and leaping, that deviate from generally accepted practices. As a result, these estimates fail to adequately account for either acute or chronic health effects from ongoing exposure to water contaminated at the one part per million level. At a bare minimum, the public deserves to know a lot more about the calculations behind officials' insistence that a one part per million level in drinking water is safe. Here's where it gets a little bit confusing. Dr. Dennison says, "I blogged earlier about how few health data are available on this chemical. With respect to oral toxicity, there appears only a single study conducted in 1990 by the chemicals producer, Eastman Chemical Company, but never made public. It is still deemed proprietary. It's a company secret because, well, it would impact their profits. Really? Toxic chemicals can be company secrets when they're... Oh, dear. That study uses one of the crudest methods around for assessing how toxic a chemical is. Feed rats the chemical and determine the dose at which 50% of the rats die in a short period of time, typically 24 hours. This dose is called the median lethal dose, or LD50. So, he writes, using that crude test, Eastman apparently found that the LD50 for this chemical was 825 milligrams per kilogram of body weight. Note that a milligram per kilogram is equivalent to a part per million, or ppm. Officials started with that value and then applied a series of uncertainty factors as follows. Because humans may be much more sensitive to the effects of a chemical exposure than rats, a tenfold interspecies extrapolation uncertainty factor was applied. That dropped the value to 82.5 ppm. Because humans differ in their sensitivity to chemical exposure, e.g. infants or the elderly or people with an illness may suffer effects at a dose that would not affect healthy adults, another tenfold interspecies extrapolation uncertainty factor was applied. That dropped the value to 8.25 ppm. Finally, acknowledging that the study in question looked only at lethality, whereas this chemical might well have other health effects short of outright killing you, a third uncertainty factor was applied. Magically, this factor was set at 8.25-fold in order to produce the nice round number of one part per million as the safe level. While the use of uncertainty factors is standard practice in risk assessment, being necessary because we don't generally intentionally test chemicals on people, two major deviations from such practice were done in this case based on highly questionable assumptions. Moreover, these calculations utterly fail to account for chronic health effects from longer-term exposure to water contaminated at the 1 ppm level. And I know this is a little bit wonky and a little bit complicated, but it's probably worth paying attention to. Because, see, it's not always going to be the forgotten, not worth paying attention to on the Sunday shows hillbillies getting poisoned. It's not always going to be the little neighborhood next to the fertilizer plant in West Texas that blows up. Someday it might be a place that really matters. So Dr. Dennison writes, first, the two tenfold uncertainty factors were erroneously applied to the LD50 value. Bear in mind, Dr. Dennison is a scientist, not a politician. The one part per million standard, from where I stand, is a political solution and not a scientific one. But he says, standard risk assessment practice is far different. Such factors would normally be applied to a value called the No Observable Adverse Effect Level, or NOAEL. That's the dose at which no effect of a chemical exposure is observed. It doesn't take a risk assessor to recognize that the dose at which no effect is seen is going to typically be far, far lower than the dose that outright kills half of the exposed subjects. In some cases, a NOAEL is not available, in which case a value called the Lowest Observable Adverse Effect Level, or LOAEL, is used. That is the lowest dose at which an effect is seen in a study. While that dose is clearly going to be higher than the NOAEL, it will again likely be far lower than an LD50. So substituting the LOAEL for the NOAEL will often be compensated for by applying an additional uncertainty factor. In the present case, then, officials have started with the wrong starting risk value, one that is far higher than they should have used. No doubt they did so because the values they should have used, the NOAEL or the LOAEL, are not available for this chemical. Why? Republicans. But that's no excuse for not compensating for this major problem, at the very least through application of an additional large uncertainty factor. So in other words, that one part per million that they're playing with down in the Kanawha Valley is the value at which half the people would die? Well, it's a modification, but you get the idea. Secondly, it was assumed without basis that any non-lethal effects of this chemical would occur at doses that were at most 8.25-fold lower than the lethal dose that would kill 50% of exposed subjects. I think I just said that. This assumption can only have been pulled out of thin air. That's reassuring. Really? Thin air? No science involved? Well, goodness me. To continue, as he says, this assumption can only have been pulled out of thin air. Put aside the convenience of selecting a factor that allowed a nice round number of one part per million to be set as the safe level, on what possible basis could it be assumed that the dose of the chemical that would, for example, be moderately toxic even in the short term to the liver or kidney be only about 1/8 the dose that would kill someone outright in just 24 hours? Many health effects of chemicals occur at doses that are orders of magnitude lower than the lethal dose. Ron and Raleigh with a query via email. Are you feeling lucky? How much would you be willing to bet that no one goes to jail over this and that if a fine is imposed, it will be worked down to the next to nothing? Cost of doing business. No, I would not take that bet because that's not a bet. That's a damn certainty. Continuing. So let's step back and examine this one part per million level from another angle. The calculations would suggest that an adult who weighs 220 pounds would need to receive a dose of 100 milligrams of the chemical to suffer effects, that would be 100 milligrams per 100 kilograms of body weight, the same as 1 milligram per kilogram of body weight. Uh-oh, that's one part per million. To get that dose, an individual would have to consume 100 liters of water contaminated at the one part per million level. That's because one part per million in water equals 1 milligram per liter. While 100 liters may sound like a lot, remember that officials are saying this is the safe level for ongoing consumption of the water. That level of consumption could be reached by drinking just 5 liters per day for 20 days. It also must be noted that exposure can occur not just through drinking water or using it to prepare food. Bathing or showering in such water would also add to the total exposure. Now, what about chronic health effects? Last and certainly not least, none of this math adequately accounts for the concern that long-term exposure to chemicals may cause chronic health effects, not just the acute short-term toxicity, in this case, lethality, that the Eastman Rat Oral Toxicity Study considered and on which all the calculations are based. Nor does the math account for how the chemical behaves in people. Does it accumulate, break down rapidly, leave byproducts that are more or less toxic? Here again, the basic health data that could be used to answer such questions do not exist. Bottom line, let me be clear, Dr. Dennison writes, I am not saying that the level of one part per million is unsafe. I am saying that we have no way of knowing whether or not it is safe. The data needed to make that assessment simply do not exist for this chemical, and that distressing reality is in no small part due to the failings of our nation's chemical safety law the Toxic Substances Control Act, which was the subject of an earlier blog piece, and which has been the ongoing subject of right-wing assaults day in, day out, hand over fist, hammer and tongs, go, 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 because after all, it's a killing jobs. Never mind if it's killing people. Now, let me add into that discussion, and I really, I'm really glad Dr. Denison put that up on the blog. It's over. Look up Environmental Defense Fund. You'll find it. But let me add to this a post that I saw on Facebook from someone who is flushing their lines in Charleston even as we speak, because the word has gone out, begin to flush your lines. And they're doing it in zones, zone 1, zone 2, zone 3. There's a map. You can input your address or whatever and find out what zone you're in and when you're supposed to flush the lines. Running water through the pipes right now is making me feel nauseous, hazy, headachy, and is making my skin itch. Not joking. What do you do? How do you respond? Every place that has public water running into it is going to have to be flushed. Now, the description that has been lately given for flushing is that one will run one's water for 20 minutes, and that one will also empty out one's water heater. But as I asked on Friday, and I still don't think we've got necessarily satisfactory answers. Given the truth of what Dr. Denison says about the fact that we have no idea how this chemical really behaves, this stuff has been sitting in people's water supplies, in their supply lines, in their homes since Thursday.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yep, 5 days. Had to count. You know me, math on the fly, not good. So it's been sitting there for 5 days. And the order comes down to flush your lines. Open every tap you have. Flush your lines for 20 minutes. But this stuff has been sitting in your what are quite often plastic PVC pipes for 5 days. Where is the science that says that your plumbing has not been materially negatively affected? And not only has this stuff been sitting in your pipes, it's been getting heated in your water heater. It's been cooking. What does heat do to this stuff? We don't know. And that's kind of the bottom line with all of this. We don't know. Nobody knows. There is no relevant, useful data. As you see from Dr. Denison's blog post at EDF, it's all they're just guessing. And they're guessing based on a standard derived from how many rats died within 24 hours of consumption of the chemical. Jug of Punch, our buddy Thomas, asking, does flushing your lines include the water company flushing your wallet with a water bill? Those questions are not fully answered. In short, I don't know. There's no way they can make the meter not turn now, is there? This is it. Well, I wouldn't wish this on anybody. But all over the Kanawha Valley, people are opening all their windows and doors in January, turning on all their taps, running their water in the hopes that perhaps, maybe, they'll be able to get a drink of water or bathe or cook. Without being poisoned. So I ask, if you were in the same situation, would you ever drink that water again? What would you do to bathe? If you had an infant in arms for whom you had to make formula from powder, how could you, in good conscience, make that formula and stick it the nipple in the baby's mouth? It's not an accusation. That is an honest question. It is not rhetorical in nature. And a lot of people are manifesting much the same sentiment. I'm looking at a comment here. My water smelled terrible as well. No smell now, but we're not ever going to drink the tap water again as long as we live here. And I'm not showering in this for at least a few days. Sorry, co-workers. Because nobody's offering a guarantee. Oh, sure, nothing in life is certain. But the water company isn't offering a guarantee. Their answer is, we don't know. Their answer is, we think, maybe, possibly, could be. And when they began flushing the lines, if you go, for instance, to wvgazette.com, you will see a map there that has a whole bunch of red, and the legend says red means do not use water. Blue means water is safe. There's just a tiny, itsy-bitsy little blip of blue in that map. Water is safe. My goodness, that sounds like a guarantee, doesn't it? Well, the first place that there was a declaration that water is safe just happened to be the area that encompassed the governor's mansion and the state capitol. Maybe a hospital. And I thought at first, that's kind of a crappy way to go about things. Making sure that the political elites of this state get their water before a mother who needs to feed a child gets water? Or before... And you know, that's another question. There's nothing but questions out of all of this. How about... Because this is the oldest or second oldest population in the United States. It's either us or Florida. who's gonna flush the lines and make sure everything's okay for elderly people? Who's gonna do that? If there is a bill for this, what about people who are on fixed incomes who cannot afford so much as a nickel's deviation from their budgeting? Ah, okay. Devin tells me that West Virginia American Water says there will be a 1,000-gallon credit applied to every affected account. Thank you, Devin. At first, I thought it was kind of insensitive to give the water to the governor first. But in the couple of hours since that news broke, I've reconsidered my position. I think it is more than fitting that this governor, who took actions to make sure not that this would not happen, but to almost ensure that it would get the first glass. Drink up, Earl Ray. Drink a liter. Chug a gallon for us just to show us how safe it is. And all you legislators who love you some coal and love you the coal industry, even though the coal industry is less than 6% of the state's economy, you're bought and you stay bought. You boys drink up, too. Ladies, too. Drink up! I never thought I would see the day when actual real life in West Virginia would mirror a scene from The Princess Bride. But here we are. Oh, what was the Wallace Shawn character? The one who kidnapped the Princess Bride. Who had the duel to the death with Inigo over the Iocane powder poisoned. Yeah. Never gamble with a friend of coal. When the stakes are death. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is for you, Freedom Industries.
Oh. swallow you, lay your body down. Find the cost of freedom buried in the ground. Mother Earth will swallow you, lay your
I'm in all-
is nice. Thank you, Ron and Raleigh. Sibo Motto, sugar water, and Ron informs me that that is Sean Lennon on bass. Email, of course, coming in. A note from our buddy Alan, Alan the trucker from years gone by. About 3 a.m., he says, I drove through downtown Charleston, and I could smell something awful around the river that flows alongside Pennsylvania Avenue. Yeah, we got a Pennsylvania Avenue, and yes, that's the Elk River, and something awful indeed. Because, see, like I said, this is a political solution, not a scientific or human health one. Rob in Minnesota writing, the spokesman for Freedom Industries sounded a lot like Tony I Want My Life Back Hayward from BP after the oil spill disaster. That's the, you're the second one to note that, Rob. Asa pointed that out a little bit ago as well. Rob also pointing out, I can't help but think that Earl Tomlin, no, you have to say Earl Ray, his name Earl Ray. I can't help but think that Earl Ray Tomlin is privately calling vocal critics like yourself whiners. Well, I'm not whining. I'm not affected by this disaster. I'm one county over. I guess we're the lucky ones. Now, we still have to boil our water, but that's because our for-profit water company, the same West Virginia American Water Company, just different water source. Well, you know, all the money goes into the share profits. So necessarily, our aging infrastructure, well, it just busted all over the place when the weather got good and cold. Yeah. So it is more in Monday. And with that in mind, well, some people are focusing on West Virginia. God knows David Gregory doesn't, and George Snuffleupagus doesn't, and Bob Schieffer doesn't, because, well, where? Roanoke? Yeah. But I got to share this with you. This is a post by Howard Crane over at Americans Against the Tea Party. And it sort of fits with what Luda wrote in a little bit ago about the convicted coke dealer who incorporated Freedom Industries. Freedom! Wolverines! Yeah. Oddly enough, after this happened, there were no all-points bulletins put out for suspicious-looking wealthy white men. On the other hand, 150 miles north of Charleston lies Morgantown, which is the home of my alma mater, West Virginia University. And just from the Department of What the... A published report from the police, or from the Monongalia, that really is the name, it's not Monongahela. When they went to incorporate the county, they misspelled it. It's Monongalia, whereas the river that flows through it is Monongahela. Headline, Sheriff's Department Looking for Suspect. Again, no funny voices, no playing with the language, nothing. Sheriff's Department looking for suspect. The Monongalia County Sheriff's Department is asking for help identifying a man involved in some suspicious activity. The person is described as a black man. If anyone has any information, he or she is asked to contact Deputy J.D. Morgan at 304-291-7260. Suspicious black guy. any, because that's going to, that's, oh my God. Then again, if it was a suspicious looking white guy, the first one you'd want to take in would be Earl Ray Tomlin. Lord God. Just had to share that. Moran Monday being what it is, let's go to the phones. You're welcome to join in, 304-658-3333. And a reminder, until we get the website back up, you can get both a listening link to the TuneIn stream and the back door to the chat room if you just run over to my Facebook page, Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, where Sparky has kindly posted both right there at the top of the page, so feel free to jump right in. 304-658-3333 is the phone number if you want to join the conversation. Or on Skype, Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, Horn, H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Sandra.
Hey, Sandra.
Listen, I thought you would have, like, you know, get a line of people trying to call in today. Well, anyway, so you're basically saying that the one part per million trope is a political situation and doesn't have any basis in reality because the chemical has no history of being tested with living things.
Rats. A group of very unfortunate rats, Sandra, in 1990.
Yesterday?
1990.
Oh. Okay, because you know, that just seems like some ratio they just pulling out their ass, because that isn't a sort of standard. You can't, I mean, I don't know that much about chemistry, but there's a way that these situations aren't unique to all elements involved that's interacting with the chemical. So they just caught with that number in order to say, listen, we're done with this crisis, you know, start using the water again.
Well, I mean, you don't want this to go on much longer, because then somebody might pay attention to it. They managed to dodge the Sunday news show cycle. So I guess they were counting themselves fortunate, and that meant that today they had to make something happen. But as far as I'm concerned, they're playing with people's lives.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's no... So we're going to have a situation where... Well, yeah, no, it's definitely had Somalia, Lebanon, or whatever the sort of hellhole you can come up with written all over it, because you're going to get a diversion of people who, if they have any sense or means, they're going to be like, oh, hell no, I'm not going to be tasting this water ever again. And trust and believe, Nestle and all these other water bottle companies, they're like, oh, shit, this is going to be an interesting market. I mean, you know, this is how the sort of neoliberal crony capitalism just adapts, and the people be damned, because there's going to be a group of people, a class of people who will have to engage with this water, because they don't have any other choice, because they can't afford it. Then you're going to have people who, I know, will not drink that water ever again.
And, I mean, there, I think back, just because of it's a frame of, we had an electrical outage that lasted 14 days a year ago, last June 29th, the derecho. You remember it, everybody remembers it. We were down for 2 weeks. And that was extremely uncomfortable and inconvenient. That didn't even begin, and there were, you know, a million people out of electricity and a lot of damage. But that doesn't come close to this, Sandra. It doesn't even touch it. Because, okay, let's say you commit to drinking only bottled water out of what are probably bisphenol-laden plastic bottles, which is no good either. Let's say you make that commitment. I'm only going to drink bottled water for the rest of my life because I can't leave and I can't drink the water. Well, that still leaves a boatload of questions unanswered. So is it going to be like Gunsmoke, where you get in a tub of recently boiled water and sponge off like Marshall Dillon? And we're talking about time travel here, Sandra.
We're talking about water. I mean, this is the thing that is, you know, just blows my mind with the lack of national interest in this. This is, you know, that's why I keep going back to Lebanon, because Lebanon is a sort of libertarian wonderland now. You have a whole bunch of rich people, and all their sewage and their waste is being sort of shipped down to where all the poor people are, literally being washed into the sea there in Lebanon.
Yeah.
So they have a treatment system for the rich, and then you get nothing. In fact, you do get something. You get the waste from the rich suburbs. So, you know, and the bargain that you think you would have is if you're living in this country, that you're not going to get a bifurcation on water, for example. I mean, this is a really sort of telling event on so many different levels, you know.
Well, this is a hell of a lot more relevant than Chris Christie. Or
that's just bullshit. You know, that's just, right. It's slow news day stuff. But
I mean, I've criticized the for-profit media a lot, but yesterday, it's like everything just crystallized.
It was really outrageous that not one of those political shows said boo. I just was like, wow, that's incredible.
And I'm sorry, I'm almost speechless here. But you know, you and I have talked about, and I've talked about, lots of us have talked about over the years, how fragile our existence really is in what we think is a high-tech, civilized wonderland. Well, 300,000 people just found out the hard way how fragile it is, and the paucity of answers coming out is shocking. And anybody who lived through Katrina, which was worse than what's happened in Charleston, and any number of other disasters, can sit there and tell you when it finally comes and happens to you, and I don't mean you, you know what I mean, it's gonna be really stark, and it's gonna be really terrifying, it's gonna be shocking, and you're gonna find out real quick just how much you matter. Because
I was in that, you know, my first hand experience was the 89 earthquake in San Francisco.
Right.
That shit was off the hook. And I was just like, what? Yeah. You know, so, no, being in a disaster is just, yeah, it definitely is sort of, tells you exactly where you fit in the environment you're in and the world at large. And, you know, you don't really matter all that much.
No, and this idea that, well, look, I'm glad. I meant to mention the paranoid false flag frenzy has also started here. I guess people can't just deal with this for what it is. There are people out there hollering that, you know, this is part of a grand conspiracy by the Obama administration to kill the coal industry. And I thought, Jesus Christ, it never ends.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was tripping on the Obama water hashtag. That shit had me tripping. I was looking at that feed for a while. It was just over the top.
Yeah.
You know, but it's, likewise with people more than happy to sort of write off West Virginia, too. There's that element, too, which is like, wow. And, this is a lot of people, you know, and the resources, water, this should be used to, you know, it's like, I don't even understand the mentality here. I mean, is it just like, well, we don't give a flying F, who cares, or it's their problem and too bad. I mean, it's just really deeply disturbing.
And I reiterate, the response of the West Virginia Coal Association from last Friday: if it's clean, if it's good enough to wash coal, it's good enough to wash me. I'm pretty sure the head of the West Virginia Coal Association was not just wildly showering in that stuff.
No, but is that? I mean, who made a statement like that? I just find that just.
That was from the official Twitter account of the West Virginia Coal Association.
Right. Wow. There's no words really. But you know, you make a good point with the poison setting up in people's pipes and every other sort of thing that contains water. I mean, are we being told that those systems will be okay? What about the residuals? I mean, I don't
know. No, that's the thing. They are studiously avoiding that. All the talk has been about flushing, you know, they're flushing the system, and we're doing it by zones so that we won't overtax the water production facilities, blah, blah, blah. Well, people who deal with industrial processes can probably answer this, Sandra. What are the great big water mains coming off of that plant made out of? And where is the guarantee that there's no residual effect of having that much poison in them for 5 days or 6 days or seven or however long this was going on? Because remember, too, this governor and this state government let people bathe in, drink, feed, cook, whatever, for at least 11 hours before they said a damn word.
No, it's true. And also, my concern, I mean, is the leak stopped? I mean...
We don't know. They say, well, you know, now, because they were saying... One of the things that they did say was that it leaked copiously into the soil underneath the tank, so that it was then also seeping or leaching or weeping or whatever into the river that way.
Which is sort of like a slow drip.
It's a percolation. So they're saying that they've taken down the tank and they've cut it into pieces, and they're digging out all the dirt. That's still no answer. Is it?
And of course, intuitively, you know, you would like to see some of these processes at work, but I'm sure they're not showing the people anything. And did anybody take a sip of tap water, you know, just for show anywhere?
No. But the irony was not lost, because this broke the night that Earl Ray Tomlin was giving his State of the State address. And he included a line about, I will never back down from protecting our coal industry from the depredations of the Obama administration, EPA.
That was part of his speech?
Oh, hell yes.
Well, you know, and also, I'm sorry, but, I mean, because I was watching that, you know, that presser in real time, so I saw that fucking prick put that bottle to his lips. And I was like, you know what? You can't make this shit up.
No,
that was so outrageous. I was like, but the thing is, you know, more power to that girl who was like, well, shit, we ain't got no water up in here, motherfucker. You, who gives a fuck if you're tired? I mean, I couldn't believe that exchange.
I was proud of it. I was proud of it.
No, I was like, good. She was like, what the hell? You know, and I'm thinking, good for you, girl. You could have lost it more for all I was, you know. She should have told him, you know, you just get fucked. We need answers. But it was good what she did.
But that's about as stringent and strenuous as anybody has gotten with anybody in this whole process. And I guess we're going to be praised for, you know, keeping our calm. But no, what the hell, Sandra? Where are the pitchforks and torches? What can a corporation do to people that will make them finally realize that enough is enough? They've had it. No more.
I know. I just, you know, I agree with you on that. And the sort of like giving these people applause when they came out, I was like, oh, no, you know, we are cowed, you know, beyond belief. Because, no, they need to be answering questions. No applauses. I couldn't even, all that just really, you know, did my head in, because everyone should be, it should be pitchfork time. That motherfucker shouldn't be out there drinking water. He should be hiding somewhere because he about to get strung up.
See, I can't disagree with you, because you've got, in this state in particular, and I don't like being hard on this state because I love this state, but you got a bunch of people out there, by God, when that Obama comes for my guns, they're going to have to shoot it out with me and Pratt from the cold dead fingers. So is that the only thing that matters in this state, Sandra? Bunch of goddamn guns?
Well, I just...
What about when they poison your family's water?
Yeah, no, I would think that would be top of the charts. And also, you know, I'm a bit scared of some of the reports. Oh, this restaurant's opening, that boiling water. Boiling water is not going to do it.
Boiling... All you got then is a hot pot of poison.
Right, not only that, but see, they're forcing these workers to come back and work. Oh, it's okay, get back to work. And it's just like...
No, we walked through the big-ass Central Mall on Saturday. It was kind of a cultural experiment, I admit. I just wanted to see what was going on. Well, the department stores, all the stores, had a full complement of workers, and not one of them could get a drink of water. I mean, I guess they were glad to be getting the hours, but damn.
No, it just really has the making of some sort of dystopian hellscape, you know, upcoming. Because if people drink enough of the water, and then it's like, oopsie, sometime in April, you know, people are fucking falling away. I mean, I'm hoping that's not going to be the case, but there's no assurances from these powers that be that everything's going to be okay and it'll just dilute as it flows to the Atlantic Ocean or wherever the hell the source is.
Right, and you know, nothing has still been heard from the guy who was, until December 31st, was president of the company, Denny Farrell, all right? He wasn't seen, and neither was Gary Southern, until late on Friday evening. That told me that they were lawyered up.
Yeah, and the thing is, they should be jailed up. I mean, once again, like when they blew up that fertilizer place, I mean, and I'm sorry, I have to back up a bit. So you can be some sort of convicted drug felon and open up a business, huh? In the meanwhile, you got millions of people of color who have to check a box to get a fucking job at Target.
There you go. But you know what? You don't. I mean, that was an empty tank farm when they bought it. It didn't. I mean, it wasn't free. It didn't come cheap. Somebody bankrolled that.
Well, I would say that, you know, the sort of maybe years of drug dealing with laundering with whatever bank around the corner. We know that it doesn't really matter. All that matters is if you have money or access to, you know, and maybe he just rolled his drug takings into that. I have no reason to think otherwise.
And what's interesting, apparently I couldn't find any reference to the fact that he had done any time, Sandra.
Well,
3/4 of a pound of cocaine and walked.
See, Darrow Issa. Okay, I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So, no, but it's just, the thing about it, though, is dealing a pound of coke is one thing. Destroying the water supply of a third of a state, well, that seems like should be up there with terror attack, Gitmo time. We know we got all kinds of means.
Well, and again, let me reiterate. Were you listening the night that Mike Rozelle was talking about his season in hell, just trying to deliver some blasting dust to the governor?
No.
Okay. Well. He's an activist and the real deal. I mean, he walks the walk and talks the talk, Rozelle does. He gathered together some dust. He put it in a mason jar and sealed it with a lid. Now, he didn't go dancing around the governor's mansion scattering it out. He simply took the dust, set it on the porch, and said, "This is the poison that falls on people in the Coal River Valley every day. I want it tested." And left it. And when he refused to take the dust away, he was arrested. And he was charged with trespassing or something. And he was put in jail for 5 days, and subjected to conditions that are Guantanamo-esque, you know, oscillating temperatures, loud noises, no clothing, no blanket, no mattress, this kind of stuff, over a jar of dust. On the other hand, this guy, the Southern and Farrell and those boys, they poisoned the water supply of 300,000 people. They're walking the streets.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just something beyond obscene about it. And, you know, in a normal world, I would be like, due process. But everybody else in this country who is nobody but a citizen is subjected to draconian, outrageous, punitive type situations for very little to nothing.
Yeah.
And yet, time after time, these sort of corporate pigs can wreak havoc and get a lawyer and drink water and talk about how they had a long ass day and I want to get my life back, and you know, nothing ever happens to these people.
And which brings us back to the question of what is it that will make people take action? I mean,
well, I don't really know.
Because
this is like a good example.
How about 10 or 20,000 people who can't get a drink of water or take a shower surrounding the governor's mansion?
You know,
or protesting in front of the house where these freaks live. I mean, did you see? You saw the pictures on Facebook, right? Of them lounging in their pool. These Freedom Industries people.
Oh, no, I didn't see all that. That's interesting,
no. I think it was Isaac that turned me on to that. Check the feed. But, yeah, her Facebook page, yeah, there's all... It's at Americans Against the Tea Party, AATP.org. There's pictures of her. She's, you know, the one guy, and he's got to, you know, this. There's a picture of him in the stocks at Bike Week somewhere. There's another picture of him lounging on a floating floating tube mattress, drinking a beer in the pool, and cavorting, grilling around. I mean, they live well. And then she takes to Facebook and says, "Well, so you're not going to give no sympathy, but how about a little empathy? You know, I bathed in that stuff, and I'm okay."
Oh my God! You know what? Lampposts, guillotines. I mean, that's all that's going around in my head. I'm sorry. I am so over all these people, really. It's, it has to get to a point where you open your mouth or you step out of your gated area at your own fucking risk.
And yet...
Nothing changes, and... We have to hear these millions.
That's the question, and that's my next question. If this was going down in France, Germany, Italy, Greece,
it would shift from 1788 to 1789. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, France is already. I haven't followed the story. I gotta look it up. They're already holding some motherfuckers. No, you're going to pay us if you're going to close this tire factory. And they did a poll, and damn near 50% of the French population's like, where's the fun with that? See, that is a legacy of revolution where it wasn't some, corrupt shopkeepers who founded this country. That's the difference, okay? There is still a legacy of the revolution, whereas here... Butt kiss.
Yeah, crickets. Nada. Crickets.
Nothing. So,
I go back to what I said on Friday. You know, it was really disgusting, and I've seen it a couple of times since then too. Well, West Virginians deserve this because they keep electing those assholes.
Well, yeah, there is that meme that I've seen. That's just unfortunate, and you know, it's like, yeah. And what does that have to do with the water that doesn't really exist for.
Well, so, I mean, you know, people. there's a lot of pretty progressive people in the Charleston area, for starters. And there's a lot of people who don't vote for Earl Ray. There's a lot of Mountain Party voters down there. There's a lot of so-called environmentalists down there who didn't keep voting for these people. But apparently, according to these asshats out there, they deserve it too. Or maybe they should have just left.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but everything is so diffused, you know, that people don't even understand the whole idea of, like, big coal or big pharma or big whatever. But maybe they'll understand that the Congress is the majority of them are millionaires, and they're waging class war on us. You know, they're not even, they don't even represent, I'm sorry, those sort of statistics are really disturbing when they want to cut, with the help of Democrats, $9 billion more out of the food stamp program, which they decoupled from the farm bill.
And see, on Thursday when this was happening, the House of Representatives was debating an assault on the EPA's ability to regulate toxic chemicals. And lo and behold, my congressman, Nick Joe Rahal, a Democrat, was one of four or five Democrats who voted with the Republicans to do that.
Yeah. No. I saw that, too. I mean, it's just, and, you know, I'm kind of concerned that they're going to ram that fast track shit through, too.
Oh, hell yeah. They'll hair-lip hell trying.
Yeah, so, you know, it's just a lot of things on the horizon here, which is just, I only see passports. That's all I see. Sorry.
I know. Anyway, I make sure I know where mine is at all times.
You know, it's just kind of like, I mean, I always sort of chuckle to myself when I think about that only 16% of Americans have passports. I'm like, ooh, that's a lot of people. Left behind.
Yeah. What is the what's the phrase? Those the veal pen.
Well, you know, I mean, not like I can make any sort of grand escape, but it's always good to have that important document. That just because I always look at it like that. It's because I put it to use. You know, it is for real, folks.
Yeah.
Get one.
And they're not that expensive.
You know, it's a document that everyone should really have. So, at any rate, I mean, you know, this is not a very productive conversation, Bob, I know, but I just am sort of, you know, kind of...
Actually, Sandra, I think it is productive because it shows that sometimes I sit here talking and I wonder if I'm making sense. I mean, like this business with the house plumbing. Would you pull out every damn pipe in your house? Would you trust them to say, yeah, sure, it's probably safe?
Well, it's just because they're not. It's hard to feel that way with the sort of vague information you're getting. It's not like they're passing out MDS, whatever those sheets are.
Yeah.
You know, they're not like emailing that to every household with a breakdown of what it is. And
well, the thing is, you know, when this thing started happening on Thursday night, the Horn family who have. Members of the Horn family who have more than a passing familiarity with things like this just ran and grabbed the MSDS for it. The problem with that is that it's largely blank.
Okay, well.
I mean, it says carcinogenesis, unknown. Mutagenesis, unknown. And see, there's something out there, Sandra, and I know you know what it is. It's called the precautionary principle. That says before you start using something or doing something that could potentially, you have to make sure that you're not going to harm innocent people in the process. Well, we operate on the ethic principle. Hey, somebody's made this stuff. They're willing to sell it so we can use it. If we harm somebody, we'll worry about it later. I mean, this stuff has been sitting around since 1990, this methyl cyclohexane methane. Since 1990s, that's when it came onto the market. And nobody had, the only, and again, that one study that shows that the dose to kill 50% of rats in 24 hours, that's a proprietary study that you can't go find right now.
Yeah, but that statistic, you know, that's scary.
And that is the only damn study that has been done on it ever, and it was done by the company's scientists.
Right. Is that not enough to send people reeling? I mean, that just that little study scares me. I'm like, well, that's a high percentage of, yeah.
And so I don't think the guy at Dr. Dennison at Environmental Defense Fund, I don't think he was trying to scare anybody. I think he went about that in a pretty satisfactory scientific way. And all he's saying is that there are assumptions being made here that are going to go literally downstream, and what it boils down to is once they give the all clear on this, we are conducting, on behalf of Eastman Industries and Freedom Industries, we are conducting a real-world, real-time experiment on human populations.
Mm.
Now, the last time that happened, there were tanks rolling across Europe.
Well, let me ask you something. Why is it that they only completed the test on half the samples and just sort of said, okay, yeah, everything's okay?
No. Well, I mean, wait, what do you mean?
Well, as a presser, they said they had 625 samples, and they tested 225.
Oh, yeah, and they showed up okay? Because that then means that statistically, if they started testing beyond that, they wouldn't get a statistically relevant negative assay, I guess.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, all that gibberish just, you know, I'm like, really, anybody is completely being rational who think, well, shit, it's a roll of the dice, and, you know, maybe I will not at least ingest this stuff, you know? I'm not even too sure about the bathing because, you know, we all know that your skin is the largest organ. So, you know, I don't know. All of it sounds real dicey.
Well, it's I'm glad I'm not in it. And I guess we got lucky because my grandchildren and their parents are in an affected county, but they're on a separate public service district that has not sold out to corporate water, so they're not affected by it. But I mean, that was where the little hairs stood up on the back of my neck, was when I thought that my grandchildren had been subjected to it, and until I found out otherwise, I was at that pitchfork threshold. But I guess I'm just weird that way.
No, I mean, I just, you know, yeah, to me, I just thought, you know, I'm thinking as this man is taking a sip, I'm like, where is somebody running up to that podium and beating the living shit out of that dude? Really? I was like, and 3, 2, you know what I mean?
Right, but nobody, you know, nobody's willing to do that anymore. Because, I don't know, you know, they'll send you to jail.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know. I just, you know, it's just, I'm so sick of these people just sort of strolling up to whatever podium and explaining horror shows and horrifying things away, you know? When they just keep coming one after another. I mean, I still wonder about, you know, we don't ever get any follow-up unless you're some sort of librarian at the Library of Congress trying to find out something. Like, what happened with that tar sand spill in Arkansas? What are them poor people doing? What about them trains that blew up in the Dakotas? What's happening with that shit?
And what? By the way, I saw a derailment of a coal train in the Northwest. I think it was in British Columbia.
Yeah, no, that just happened, and you didn't get much information from that. You had the one in French-speaking Canada that blew up that whole town and 40 people perished. What's the deal with that? You know, it's like la 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 la, and Christie.
You know, this will constitute the irrational part of the program, Sandra. but I'm furious with that rat bastard over the bridge thing, simply because somehow or another he and his shenanigans managed to keep the nation from finding out how easily they can be poisoned. You know,
well, exactly.
I mean,
pardon
me for, I'm just gonna, God damn it. We run around scared to death that some disaffected Muslim is gonna blow up, I don't know, Wally World. And the whole time we have the terrorists right under their nose, and they're posting Facebook photos of them floating in their backyard goddamn pool.
No, I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, at some point, I mean, it's obviously going to take something massive, some movement by a mass of people, because
and the people on our side, bless his heart. Malloy talked about this at length. Rick Smith has talked about it. But I'm sitting here looking in the chat room, and Texas Betsy just posted, Rachel Maddow has yet to mention West Virginia, nothing but Chris Christie, 3 days straight.
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised.
Nothing on Up with Chris nothing on Up with Chris Kornacki this weekend.
No, because they have to talk about Chris Christie. The only person I saw talking about it was Chris Hayes.
We got a mention from Chris Hayes. That's right.
That was it, and he was sort of taken aback by Joe Manchin. Don't blame Cole. I was like, damn, this fool is off the chain. That was like all that could come out of his mouth.
Well, did you notice how Manchin said, "Don't blame Cole," and then what is it, two, three times Earl Ray Tomlin said, "Cole ain't got nothing to do with this."
No, I just the whole thing was just it was just hideous. I mean, in the meanwhile, these pigs that beat this poor homeless man to death just got acquitted. I just see that.
Yep, I saw that.
I'm in California. I'm like,
well, or the preacher? Was it California where the preacher got busted for plotting to bomb his ex's house and got to go to the pulpit the next morning?
Well, yeah. Well, that's just a bitch. Who cares about that, right?
That's the way it looks.
So, no, but it's, you know, things are kind of, yeah.
I mean, we had one story roll out. A man was scheduled for a kidney transplant. Well, that was deemed to be elective. That was deemed to be elective surgery, so transplant canceled. Transplant donor, goodbye now, and he's back on dialysis.
Right, and the thing is that the donor, yeah, no, that story was a horrible story. Yeah, I mean, it's...
And meanwhile, the best that the Attorney General can do, and of course he came from New Jersey and was a lobbyist for Big Pharma and is a Republican, a darling of the teabaggers and a friend of the Chamber of Commerce, yada, yada, yada. The best thing he could say was, now don't you people be out there price gouging on selling water.
Well, no, I mean, I think about the CEO of Nestle who says that, oh, water, all water should be private so people can appreciate the value of it. I mean, this is what, you know, what kind of sociopath is running Nestle. And so they probably see this as, you know, every crisis is an opportunity. You know, I mean, all of it is just the lack of concern at the end of the day is always what is gobsmacking, if that's a word.
I mean, the best that my governor can do is to say, well, this chemical leak is unacceptable. Can you imagine an actual dynamic leader? You know, pick one. Because there was a time in America when a governor would have said, you find that son of a bitch and you get him in on the carpet in front of me yesterday.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, no, you don't get anything like that because all these people, I guess, are just, you know, just appendages of these various corporate entities. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of because, you know, and also, were you reassured by the when they rolled out the military dudes? That was another thing. I was like, oh, right.
Oh, please, no.
That's supposed to calm us down, I guess. But, yeah, all of it has just been an exercise in sort of awfulness, you know?
Yeah, and I guess we'll forget about it real soon. I don't plan on it, but I guess we'll forget about it pretty quick.
I forgot about it.
I mean, even here.
Well, I guess.
Even here, once people can turn on their faucets and get a drink of water, well, everything's okay, I guess. I guess, maybe, kind of, sort of.
They just sort of settle back into being slowly poisoned, or maybe not, because we don't know, right? Fuck.
And the thing is, if something is wrong, Sandra, it might take a couple of years. And then people will get mysteriously sick.
No, that's the thing. And also, they may, even when this thing was happening, well, we don't have any connection with if this people are getting ill because of this water thing. They were already saying that during the crisis. I was like, wow.
And yet there are 10 people, there are 10 people admitted right now to the hospital, and I think over 150 have gone to the ER with symptoms. Because this stuff really does make you sick. Breathing it, God knows drinking it, it makes you sick.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't...
And that company will go bankrupt. They'll go bankrupt so fast it won't be able to see straight.
Right. No, of course. All the sort of, you know, all the rules are put in place for them and not us. Even when precious resources like water have been annihilated, you know, these people can still just walk, move on to their next... Coke-funded business. I mean, I don't mean it by the Coke brothers. No pun intended.
No, but it, well,
you know what I'm saying? Just
well, yeah, that was kind of a double whammy. Good one.
Yeah, onto the next enterprise.
And remember, they're flushing the system. So where are they flushing it to? Isaac just pointed this out on Twitter.
Love to know.
Well, they're flushing it into city sewer systems, who are also unable to treat this stuff. And the city sewer systems, or the public sewer systems, will then pump it back into a river.
No, it's just, I haven't checked their stock price today, but the last when I looked, you know, it had gone up, and I'm like, what in the fuck? So yeah, it's.
And just to remind people of what the of what the sort of hydrologic map is around here. This stuff will get pumped back, you know, because again, real plain, it cannot be treated away. So it's going to get pumped into the Kanawha River. And some of it's going to settle to the sediment because it's at least partially water soluble. It'll sink to the bottom. Other parts of it will just go on downriver. And at Point Pleasant, it'll enter the Ohio River. And the Ohio River at Paducah, Kentucky will enter the Mississippi River. Okay? Or Cairo, Illinois, or wherever it is. And then, you know, it'll just flow into the, I forget who referred to it this way, it'll flow into the Gulf of BP.
Oh, I'm happy to laugh. Oh, God, that's, yeah. No, it's all very awful. You know, it's it's a major story. I agree with you on that it should not be something that, you know,
well, I think we've got a major nominee for what's that program? I can't remember what college runs it or what outfit runs it. Project Censored for the most underreported stories of the year. This thing has got to be taking an early lead.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, I'm loath to ask if you watched any football.
Yes, I did. I did. No, I mean, my head would have exploded if I hadn't.
I didn't know if that was a subject.
No. I watched it. I mean, poor old San Diego was just, you know, ineffective, and I guess the big deal was Colin Kaepernick mocking Cam Newton. So you know that just ate up the sports world for a little while. And,
was he mocking him? How? I missed that.
Oh yeah, he ran it into the end zone and then stood there and did Cam Newton's Superman pose, because you know everybody's got a pose now.
Oh right, okay. Well, you know, and some people were so outraged by that.
Oh yeah, people were outraged.
Well, it's a nasty ass game. I don't get no outrage about that. You know, but my favorite, of course, was. I mean, you know, I'm not a huge Patriot fan, but I'm sick of Andrew Luck and that fucking ass kissing they were doing with that boy.
Oh,
so when the Hoodie and Tomo, Nasty Brady, they just sort of took care of that punk. And I was like, oh, well, don't fuck with the hoodie.
No, no, because
I'm not going to be for them anymore.
No, because he F's back. Yeah.
You know, I just like, I'm interested. I hate when they get these choir boys that they all latch onto. You know, out of football press media.
Oh, yeah.
That. There's always somebody. And I'm sure Andrew Luck is a perfectly nice person, but I was laughing when he got, you know, he ran up against a brick wall.
Yeah, you know his daddy is the athletic director here at West Virginia University, right?
Oh, right. I didn't know.
Yeah, Ollie Luck actually played quarterback for West Virginia, and he's our athletic director now.
I know he comes from, you know, big-time football royalty. So
right.
That's the deal. Yeah, well, anyway, I know I'm horrible, but I was laughing.
No, no, I'll be interested to see what happens between New England and Denver.
Well, and the hoodie was just standing there looking just as menacing as he could be. All of it was well funny. And, you know, I ain't never seen Tom Brady finding all them nondescript, small, white running backs. Go on with yourself. and the wide receivers. I mean, who are the players on the Patriots? They really got, some low-key... I'll give credit to Tom Brady. He's good at what he does.
Yeah, they're just the under-the-radar boys.
You know? But, I don't know. You know, I don't know. That game should be kind of amusing next week.
I don't think Seattle's going to be a pushover either.
Oh, no, that's going to be hella. No, that's going to be the more interesting. You know, because, you know, I hate the 49ers, so it's going to be, you know, Carroll and his madness, his new age shit all day long. So, go Seattle. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
I'm damn.
Yeah, I do.
That fool. I mean, you know, the thing about him is that he was like, USC, I'm outie. He left that program.
Right. You know, good. Goodbye now. Enjoy the sanctions. See you later.
You know, just so wrong. But, I suppose next week should be pretty interesting.
I think it'll be an absolute, if this week is anything like the end of the last one, I'm just going to plant myself in front of a TV somewhere, hope the beer is cold, and just make it all, you know, 24 ounces take me away.
Without some sort of, you know, some new disaster. And they've been like completely radio silenced in the White House about this or have they?
They got the disaster response out there quick.
Oh, okay.
But the thing is, if I was the White House, hell, I'd fly the president in and have him handing out water, except for the fact that this is West Virginia and they might do something dangerous.
Not only that, but they already blaming the White House for the whole thing, right? Which is equally.
Why was FEMA conducting tests in West Virginia right before this happened? Well, I didn't know FEMA was.
And not only that, but oh god, I'm sure Alex Jones.
That's what I said. The false flag reports are already going fast and furious. Let me see if I can remember. Okay, so you know it was a 1-inch hole that was the leak, right, Sandra? It was a 1-inch hole in the tank.
Okay.
The false flag report says, oddly enough, a 1-inch hole in that kind of steel is exactly the kind of hole that would be produced by a sniper's bullet. And take it away.
I don't have anything.
That's at that point in time, you stab yourself in the neck with the Thorazine dart and just, you know, it's, fuck, you know.
Definitely. Well, anyway, listen, I'll leave it at that. I don't have anything else to say.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for the conversation, Sandra. I'm glad to get the validation of what for me remains a very, very disturbing situation.
Yeah, no. You know, stay safe. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, don't drink the water.
Okay, bye.
Later, Sandra. Sandra calling from California, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey.
Hey, it's Larry from Berkeley. How are you?
Hey, what's happening, Larry?
What's happening? I wanted to ask, if, you know, I got to tell you something. It's really good to hear Sandra again.
Oh, yeah.
Long time since I've heard Sandra.
Oh, the fan mail rolls in every time. Yeah.
And I'm feeling better. I heard Sandra, so she makes my she makes it my book. So in any case, I've had a afternoon of horn because I was listening to Bill earlier. It was very interesting. I wanted to ask, we've got some things that are going on in our legislature and politically that we need to know how to organize and lobby about here in California about people with disabilities. We've also got an initiative drive that we're going to be trying to fight where something is going to probably be on the ballot. And given the fact that we're a small minority group without very much money who's very poorly organized and have no money to be able to do any kind of real PR, or to, do you have any suggestions about how we might want to conduct our lobbying efforts? You'd work with Coal River Mountain Watch, and of course your issues are, you know, matters of literal life and death. Well, our issues are too, but you know, your issues really affect everybody in your state and probably everybody.
Yeah, but I think Larry, that your issues have a broader applicability than perhaps you know, because no society is worth a damn that cannot respect the needs of the differently abled.
Yes. Well, we're
so frame them up as a human rights issue, you know, and questions of, you know, is it either this happens or it's a tacit statement by you that we're not quite as human as the rest of you.
Yeah. No, I could sit back and wait until all this is a done deal. A lot of my friends aren't, and they're involved in reading the regulations, and they're involved with the negotiating process and how these programs are being rolled out in the state. But I don't have the ability to, my stress, my ability to stay calm and to be reasonable, such as yourself.
Mine? What?
Your ability to communicate. I haven't ever talked to Bo, but I'd imagine that your ability to, both of your abilities to be able to talk reasonably and rationally.
No, it gets pretty furniture kicky sometimes. I mean, you talk to people who, I'll never forget sitting across from an aide for Elizabeth Warren who played with her hair and clicked her pen the entire time that I was talking. And I was pretty disgusted when I got out.
Oh, boy. So you didn't think that she understood you at all or didn't care about
you? I didn't think she gave a damn. I thought she was taking a meeting that somebody told her she had to take, and she was just, you know, checking off a box.
Oh, boy. Well, we don't know whether we're going to be... We have to go through the governor just put out his budget. You know, they put out a budget January 10th, and then it goes through the legislative process. This is about the state budget every year. That's how our process works. And then
sure.
We have it parcels out to different committees, and then it goes from one committee to one house of the legislature to the other house, and then the governor decides to do a revise in May based upon the updated forecast of the Department of Finance, and then by June 30th, we're supposed to have a budget, you know, an operating budget for the next year. So this is where all the public policy and all the appropriations bills come through, and one of these issues is not even, you know, an issue that's legislative. It's an initiative, and it's illegal for me to call a legislator's office and try to talk about campaign stuff, which sometimes I forget, but, you know, I mean, it's they're related, so... in any case, so you just go up to Washington and just put your best foot forward and try to present your case.
Well, the first thing you have to do is know the material that you're advocating over, upside down, backwards, forwards, and inside out.
Okay.
And you work with your colleagues to try to, try to anticipate every possible question. And of course, you never can anticipate them all, but if you work at it, you'll anticipate most of them.
Okay.
But people need to, you know, the thing for y'all to do is just to remind people how many people they know, because everybody knows someone who is dealing with a disability.
Yeah.
And so it isn't a niche issue or a boutique issue or an issue that touches only a few people. It touches the entirety of society, Larry.
Yeah. Well, we have a caregiver program here. I don't know what happens in your state. I know that years ago, my friend who's no longer, unfortunately, she's no longer alive. There were some unfortunate circumstances around her, but she was a democratic socialist and also a person with a disability. And her family is from Mississippi. And she said, you know, about 20 years ago in Mississippi, they didn't have anything for people in Mississippi who are disabled, no support whatsoever. So, you know, given the fact that we have any kind of support at all, probably, when you compare it to other states, is probably pretty damn good. But still, we're trying to, there's such a thing as called the medical model of disability, where the doctors and the nurses try to determine how they're going to treat a person with a disability. And there's such a thing called the social model that came out of the independent living movement and came out of Ed Roberts here in California and various people in the country that tried to put the decision-making power in the hands of the person with a disability themselves, so that they wouldn't be treated like a institutionalized patient. You know, they'd be able to make to live out in the community. They'd be able to have the money come out with them in the community, so they'd be able to live as independently as possible. And it looks like the state, because of money, it looks like the state wants to try to streamline and put a greater limitation on the social model of disability. And we're some people in the disability community, there are very few of us that really know what's going on. Probably 99% of the people with disability in the state don't even know that this is happening or can't even comprehend what's going on. And same thing with the caregivers. So we've got a few of us out here that know what's happening, and we're trying to fight it. And we're finding that we get resistance not only from the state people under Jerry Brown, who I have to say, and I can say this over the air, I can't prove it because I can't bring you back in time or bring anybody back in time, but I do know that during Ed Roberts' memorial, if you know who he is, he's the father of the disability movement here in California, and he attended UC Berkeley in an iron lung in 1962 and 63, and eventually started the whole drive toward people getting out of institutions and living in a community and be able to participate like anyone else in the society. And he and his mother and other people developed this model in Berkeley. So Berkeley is like Berkeley's one of the birthplaces of it, along with Champaign-Urbana back in the 40s, and UCLA and other places like that. But I was in the back of the recreational sports facility in UC Berkeley in March of 1995, and I'm sitting there looking at pictures of Ed while he was alive. He died March 16, 1995. Jerry Brown walks into the recreational sports facility. He doesn't know me. I don't know him. We've never laid eyes on each other in our lives. And he looked directly at me and said, "This movement is dead, isn't it?" Meaning the disability rights movement, the independent living movement.
Wow.
And I wouldn't say that to you if I didn't understand it clearly. And you know, I distinctly remember him saying it. The only problem is that I don't have a tape recording of it, or I don't have any way to verify the truth of what I'm saying to you. I mean I can't do that. There's no way I can go back 18 years or whatever, not almost 19 years, and show that he said that. But he walked into the recreational sports facility for the memorial and said, "This movement's dead, isn't it?" And this is a man that appointed Ed Roberts to the Department of Voc Rehab when he was governor the first time. And he clearly knows what disability is about. And so it's like that's the situation. And then I'm concerned that the union management for the Service Employees International Union we're concerned. Now, I don't know the whole story about all this, so maybe it's not good for me to talk about it, but you know, I don't know whether or not the management of the Service Employee International Union is actually bargaining in the best interest of caregivers that are already part of their rank and file, or whether or not they're using some of these new federal regulations about paying overtime when the state has clearly said that this is not, the budget process hasn't happened, but we're concerned that, the, you know, the state already said that they're not going to pay overtime to our caregivers, and if they don't pay overtime, we're concerned that they're going to actively cut our hours, cut our caregivers' hours to, you know, a certain cap, and, you know, some of our caregivers work more than that amount, and they're not complaining that they're being exploited by their clients. So it's going to set up a dynamic where I have my caregiver and her hours are going to get cut. We think that we believe that that's going to happen. We don't know that that's going to happen, and we don't even know if the legislature is going to go along with this plan. The governor just announced it a couple days ago. But, you know, and then there's such a thing as a mandatory training component, which the unions want, which means that everybody that wants to be a caregiver at a certain point has to have a certain kind of a training,
a certain degree of expertise,
degree of expertise leading to something like an actual professional degree, you know, an actual professional designation as a home health care aide or as an LVN or as a nurse or as someone like that. And normally those people get training in working in hospitals, working in institutions, and working alongside doctors and nurses, so that, and physical therapists and that kind of thing. So they get trained to do certain procedures which may or may not work in the individual caregiver client circumstances at home. And then most of the caregiving, I'm told, is being done not by professionals but by family caregivers, and the family caregivers are going to lose that income, and how is this kind of a training program or these cuts in pay, if they take place. These two things I'm talking about are ifs. They're big ifs, because, you know, they have to get signatures in order to go to the voters about the mandatory training. And then the other thing that I'm talking about has to go through the budget process, and the legislature may or may not accept that, so they can always take it out of the budget. But we're concerned for the family caregivers as well, because what happens if the family caregivers, and most of them, those are the people that actually do the attendant care work, they actually, you know, they give up their regular job, if they had a job, to take care of their disabled loved one. And if they're being forced to go through all this and they're going to lose money, how are they going to be able to, you know what I'm saying? And you know, they already have a relationship with their loved one, and my caregiver already has a relationship with me of long standing. So what happens is, if the legislature goes along with it and they give her a cap on her hours, that means the other hours that I get that are above the cap
are somebody else.
Pay for help. Somebody else has to come in to do it, and that's what we're concerned about. So I'm giving you information. I don't know if it's, I'm giving you the best information I can. I can't verify it all. And, of course, there are many different opinions on it. So don't take my opinion as being the only opinion out there on it. There are plenty of other people, especially the Service Employees International Union, which may have a different opinion. So don't just take my, and you need to talk to some other people. But that's what we're concerned about now, about people with disabilities. And I just, given the fact that we've got a fight on our hands, I need to know what to do about it. And then I also need to know, since we're talking about the Charleston water situation and mountaintop removal, all that, what I need to do to help you all out so that you get some clean water and so that they finally begin to get some infrastructure in the state, so you don't have to be so dependent upon the coal and so that you can finally have some more middle class. Or maybe I'm naive or silly. You know, I don't understand the culture, obviously, where you are, so and the history of the state or the history of the region, so I don't know how it all developed. But I'd like to see some other kinds of jobs there so that y'all can...
Well, but that's the eternal... devil, that's the eternal predicament that we face here. In a mono economy, how do you break out of the mono economy frame?
Uh-huh.
And so far, nobody's really come up with the answer. I mean, we built a little tourism industry sprung up here in the New River whitewater rafting area. Lo and behold, here came the mountaintop removers to blow that all to hell and, you know, poison the water and, you know, things that mountaintop removal companies do.
Did the coal companies actively discourage businesses, you know, medium-sized businesses or reasonably sized businesses from coming into the state when it was possible to avoid some of the...
Well, no, it just works out that way, Larry. If you're a reasonably responsible employer, why in God's name would you come to a place that's poisoned?
Okay, I see what you're saying. But they didn't do something before, you know, they didn't, the region, okay, I understand. So what you're saying...
I mean, the economy is trying to diversify. You know, when you get to the point where coal in West Virginia is less than 6% of the gross state product, I'd say you're diversifying the economy. The problem is, there's nobody out there who has $60,000 a year jobs for people who drop out of high school when they're 16 years old to go and run a D9 Caterpillar on a mountaintop removal site. Okay?
Oh.
There just aren't a lot of people paying $60,000 a year to people who aren't more broadly educated.
You'd think I'd be able to pick that up. I'm sorry if I'm so naive.
Oh, no. There's nothing to apologize for. By the way, you got a note in from Kevin in Colorado Springs. Disability issues is the subject line. He says, you telling Larry his issues there in California have a broader appeal than he thinks reminded me of a saying I've heard in the disabled community, and it is this. Anyone who lives long enough is going to sooner or later have a disability.
That's true.
And he says, it is one of the truer things I've heard.
And you know something else, Bob?
Because we as human beings... the very nature of the aging process is such that we fall apart.
Yeah, and you know something else? Anybody can become disabled. Doesn't matter how wealthy you are, how poor you are, whether you're white, African American, Hispanic American, or Latin American, Native American, whatever, you know, anyone can become disabled. So our minority group, our minority classification, we encompass everybody. Sometime or another, so it's like that's the way that it is, and I need to talk to Kevin because they have an interesting arrangement in Colorado, I'm told, with their caregiving, but I need to talk to Kevin about it, so I probably will get a hold of him and be able to talk with him, and if he can't help me, he probably knows some people in the disability community that can, you know, give me a heads up on it, because I've heard that.
Well, and by the way, let me just jump in real quick. You just got a note from Kate. Subject line: updating disability from down yonder. She says, "I want to mention that Mississippi has a very active Mississippi Protection and Advocacy Program now. They work with the differently abled and seniors. Larry might want to contact the main office in Jackson for some advice. They're very active and caring. I worked with them all the while I was doing Katrina relief."
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate those emails. Thank you, Kevin, and thank you. Who's the other person?
Kate.
That
Kate.
On
yeah,
email?
Kate out on the Front Range in Montana.
Thank you, Kate. I appreciate that very, very much. Thank you. I heard something about a Chesapeake. There's a group that's trying to work on issues around water or environment around the Chesapeake, and I don't know. I can't remember whether I heard it on Best of the Left podcast, or but I'll have to look it up. But when I thought about Chesapeake, I immediately thought about Coal River Mountain Watch. So, you know, because you all are pretty close to the Chesapeake Bay.
It's a right smart long drive, yet it's a good 8 hours.
Yeah. So,
but no, I think I know about the group you're talking about. They're doing very, very good anti-fracking work. Well, Larry, I tell you what, it's awful good to hear from you. And don't be afraid to get out there and advocate because if affected people had to sit around and wait for the smart people or the so-called experts, nothing would ever happen. And we have learned that the hard way here. I mean, none of the so-called experts, none of the so-called smart people went to Washington D.C. and got the AIC Act. That was just a bunch of pissed off hillbillies tired of waiting around for the money people and the smart people and the experts to finally do something to bring some relief.
I appreciate it. While you brought up fracking, apparently Governor Brown, now I haven't seen the particulars on it, but apparently I got an email saying, you know, tell Governor Brown that you don't like his fracking plan. And I looked at that in my mouth, you know, my tongue just about dropped out of my mouth. Because if, in fact, he is advocating some kind of fracking plan for California, that's really, that is like the other stuff I can perhaps understand. But he's an environmental governor, or was. And so if that, in fact, is the case, that's really scary. Okay, Bob, I know you've got other people to get to.
All right, Larry, you have yourself a good evening.
All right. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Oh, no. Thank you for making it, and I hope we'll do it again soon. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Larry calling from the Bay Area. And on we go. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? I'm guessing this is Bill, because I had a note from Thomas. Hey, Bill, are you there? Bill. Oh, rats. Shucks. Let me put that line back on hold. Hello? I was kind of hoping. Hello?
Yeah, it's Tom.
Oh, hey, Tom.
Yeah, I don't know where Bill is.
Okay, so this was Bill.
Yeah.
Okay. You want to try to redo the connection?
Yes, ma'am. So let me try it.
Okay.
I'm going to have to hang up though.
Okay, that's fine. I'll just watch for it to ring back in.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Thomas. Thomas working his magic to make it possible for Bill to reach the program. A little more information from Kate, not touching on the topic that Larry was discussing. But Kate says, on to another subject. The latest stat that I know of is that 85% of the world population do not have potable water. It has often been said that the U.S. is a third world country. Welcome to the big world. There are small towns all over up here and in Canada. They have no sewer nor water. Hey, we got no sewer here. But we never hear about them. I gave up my Cassandra gig a while back, Kate says, but sometimes I can't control my fingers on the keyboard. I don't know how much more we can take, nor what to do about any situation that we have to suffer through. And I think some of what Kate is getting at goes to the heart of issues of privilege. We take for granted things like being able to open the tap and get clean drinking water. It is a far more fragile situation than most people would dare to even think about, especially in a place like the United States. And it can all go away ever so fast. I don't know how much more either, Kate. And I fear we're going to find out. Oh, by the way, I've had a couple of inquiries from folks because the website is down at the moment about how to make a contribution.
And if you just go and log into your own PayPal account and send to bobkincaid@gmail.com, that's the associated address for the Horn PayPal. Bob Kincaid, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Because we started the program in a hole, but I wasn't even thinking about this in light of the fact that there was no website. But you can just log into your own PayPal account and do a send direct to that address, and that will be here. Email coming in from Alan the Trucker. I was just thinking that most tanks that I see hold hazardous liquids have a moat around them, so if someone does shoot a hole in it, that the liquid can be caught in the moat that's lined with plastic. I guess with the libertarians, though, that safety moat is only voluntary. Well, that's the problem. That's one of the problems in the Freedom Industries disaster, Alan. There was a spillover tank or an overflow tank involved in this process. The thing is, those people were so negligent and so absolutely uncaring about the process that they didn't even notice that the leak in the main tank had flowed into the overflow tank, and that the overflow tank had then begun overflowing and leaking into the Elk River. That's the depth of disdain that is operative in this problem. Alan noting, hell, the hole in the tank could have been caused by someone deer hunting with a military rifle. Not terribly likely. Not terribly likely at all. This is just negligence. This is just the free market. Again, I repeat, in addition to the methyl cyclohexane methane that leaked into the Elk River, there was also a whole lot of conservatism and teabaggery and libertarianism. That's what all of that was. And Kate says, another suggestion. By the way, the other way we can keep making an effort is to keep contributions coming to the Horn. If this is one of the three places we can get hard news, why aren't we willing to contribute? Thank you, Kate. 27 minutes before the hour. Let's check back in with the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
It's Alan.
Hey, what's happening?
Pretty good. You just read my email.
Yes, I did. It's been a very long time. I hope you're well.
Oh, pretty good. I've been to Poland and back since I talked to you last.
That's a long drive.
Yeah. I took an airplane, of course. But everybody drinks water over there. Bottled water. I think it's kind of crazy to have to go buy a bottle of water to drink. But they said it makes you sick. We don't want West Virginia to be like the city of Poland I went to.
Well, but they can still bathe in it.
Yeah, they can still bathe in it and cook with it. I think you can still drink it, too, over there if you just boil it. But yeah, this is a lot worse than
I mean, like I said, we're under a boil water advisory here, so anything we're going to cook with, anything we're going to wash dishes with, anything that we're going to drink has to be boiled until we get the all clear here. But that's just, you know, that's just because of a bunch of busted mains and the fact that that lets all kinds of microorganism contaminants into the water. They'll eventually get everything flushed through and bleached out, and our water out of the tap will go back to tasting like a swimming pool again.
I was wondering if those little gadgets that you put water in, you shake them, and it's supposed to clean the water enough to drink it. Will those things work?
Well, they specifically recommended in the case of the Freedom Industries disaster that people do not try to, that it will not. And, in fact, in our boil water advisory, it says don't try that.
Okay. Well, it must be pretty bad chemical then.
Well, yeah, this stuff is awful. This MCHM, you can't clean it, you can't filter it out, you can't do anything with it.
Uh-huh. Oh, gee.
So it makes perfectly good sense that you would want it sitting in multi-thousand gallon tanks within a few feet of the
source of the entire area's drinkable water supply. Sure, why not? What could possibly go wrong, right?
Only in a libertarian paradise.
Yeah. So you drove through Charleston the other night?
Yeah, last night, about 3 in the morning.
And you say it was stinking?
I drove over a river that goes right parallel with Pennsylvania Avenue. So I don't know the name of that river. Do you?
Well, that's the Elk, if I understand where you were correctly, yeah.
Okay. Well, that was the Elk River. It's a smaller river. It goes into the bigger one.
Yeah, the Elk empties into the Kanawha right there, right there just shortly before the Great Big Bridge where I-64 crosses the Kanawha.
Okay, that's where it was then. And that was an awful smell. It didn't smell like licorice to me.
Well, and get this, also sitting on the banks of the Elk River down, and I'd forgotten about this until you mentioned it, Alan, also sitting on the banks of the Elk River just downstream from those fine, concerned, profiteering, well, the bastards from Freedom Industry, is Women's and Charleston Area Medical Center Women's and Children's Hospital. That's where our two, that's where Ferg and Doodle were both born. Now, imagine that stuff going into the air, and it's wafting right across our Women's and Children's Hospital.
Wow. Gee. So that stuff I smelled last night, if I got a good whiff of it, it probably would have harmed me.
It's no good. It's no good. It certainly has no salutary effects, that's for sure.
Wow. I remember driving over a bridge that went, a river went into the Gulf of Mexico after the oil spill down there.
Mm-hmm.
I smelled something really, really awful down there. It had to have been that Corexit.
I was going to say, well, you want to bet that was Corexit? Sure.
Yeah, cause I never smelled anything like that. It was really bad.
Well, we smelled it. Ferg and I were going through Charleston on Saturday on the way to somewhere else. And we crossed over the Elk. And, yeah, stupid me, Alan, we deliberately rolled down the windows to see if we could smell it. And, yeah, it was there. It was nasty. I didn't get licorice out of it, though. I just got nasty. But then again, I'm no licorice fan, so yeah, maybe that's part of it.
Well,
I mean, I once upon a time when I was a little kid, we visited St. Louis, and we were just down the street from the Switzer's licorice factory. Now, that smelled like licorice.
Yeah.
This, not so much.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I get licorice root occasionally and boil it. Supposed to be healthy for you, but not this licorice that you're talking about.
No, so where you been driving lately?
Oh, just all over, mainly the eastern part of the country now. I have a girlfriend now who lives in Lafayette, and she's from Poland. And we went to Poland together last fall, and I got to see Poland pretty good. And she introduced me to two groups of her relatives. And I don't speak Polish, so she was interpreter. And she told them that I was interested in politics. So both groups said the same thing, unrelated to each other. They said that socialism is a good thing, and we need more socialism. That's what they said in Poland. I told them that people over here don't know the difference between socialism and communism, and they were just like stunned. Can't believe that.
Oh, well, that's one of the more interesting side notes to traveling over there. There's a lot about the American social consciousness that people find stunning.
Yeah, and they've been listening to the news lately, or last fall, and about our debate about health care. And they were absolutely stunned that we didn't have
healthcare. Do they have some sort of universal single payer there?
Yeah, but being it's a poor country, it's not that good, but it's a lot better than nothing.
which is what we have, right?
Yeah. Well, that's what we had before Obamacare, I guess. But
no, there's still a lot of people who have it after Obamacare. I'm one of them.
Yeah. I know what Alabama doesn't have. They don't have the Medicare part to it because we have a Republican governor.
Right. Yeah, you didn't get the Medicaid expansion.
Yeah, so got a lot of poor people left out, and so that makes Republicans happy when people get mad, don't have health care, I guess.
I can't. They're past my ability to comprehend, Alan. Well, it's awful good to hear from you. Don't be such a stranger.
Oh, okay. It's nice to hear from, nice to talk to you.
Well, holler in just any time, all right?
Okay, have a good day.
All right, drive careful, Alan.
Okay.
Bye now. Alan the trucker out on the road somewhere. Alan's been a part of the Horn family for a very, very, very long time. Let's keep it going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Good evening, Bill. How are you?
Well, I'm supposed to leave here tomorrow, and with some help from one of our friends up here, have a computer back again, I hope. It's been mishmashed, but it's going to be okay.
Well, we're all waiting and anxious for you to get home. I got to tell you, you know that.
Well, yeah, the old boy is usually so full of crap that he can unload a lot of it. That was a great speech about the health aides, by the way. Who was that of the West Coast?
Oh, that was Larry.
Yeah, he had it right on the money. This is the worst piece of crap I've ever seen in my life. The way it's run in Ohio, it's disgusting. Here, take this, steal this. There's things all over the map with people who get arrested, and it's in the plain dealer. And I don't think the newspaper makes the stuff up because they got nothing better to write about.
Well, I tell you what, you're sounding. It's tough subject matter, but you're sounding really good.
Well, I'm on a much better phone than mine. Mine will be back on, and in fact, my buddy put me on Uverse. It better work this time in this building, or I'm going to be stark raving mad. But
you've been getting out and about some.
Yeah, I've been out and about quite a bit. Cold as a dog. I was helping my buddy who's loaded the stuff. I was helping him go through stuff today. So I threw away a lot of stuff, you know. So the way it goes, to try to give away these books to people, you know.
Oh, books, man. I hate parting with them.
Oh, it breaks my heart because... But I can't read them all anymore, so what the hell are you going to do? But I haven't been able to hear you much here and there.
Well, I know. That's one of the better things about you getting to go home.
Yeah, there's been a whole lot of stuff being talked about that I'm sure I haven't heard about. It's amazing how they can keep things quiet. Just simply amazing.
Well, most of what's been taking up our time is this massive, chemical spill here in West Virginia.
Yeah. That's a big thing. What gets to me here is listening to people argue and carry on before breakfast and lunch, people with bad situations, you know? And yelling stuff at each other and calling each other names. And you'd think the system would work better than it does, but so far, no good, you know. But anyway, I won't keep you, but tell my friend down there in south of Cleveland, I'm hoping that his computer will be up and running and I'll be half human again.
Well, I think you just did.
Oh, okay. Because I have to say half human, you know. It's you go with half of what you can do.
Yeah, there's only you mean there's only so far your optimism will take you.
Yes, and this professional football stuff, I don't know. It's there was a book back out in the 50s, a comic thing that they talked about bumpy stompers, pro football shoes, and how bumpy fans were getting into the game ahead of college ball. And it's been so long, I haven't read it in such a long time. But I don't really know if these guys are that good, or whether, because the guys used to tell me when I was a kid that they thought the whole thing was fixed.
And I find myself thinking that about basketball more than football, but yeah.
Because some of the plays are like, I don't know. I mean, I'm glad to see what's his name. Although I do hate Indiana, you know.
Yeah, mandatory, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, where you are.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm hoping for. I do pull for minimum, Massachusetts, because Mr. Brown Art made himself look like a dummy in that one. Yeah, I know Art has won a Super Bowl, but it's the man who won the Super Bowl for Art was that big offensive end that he picked up for years. What's his name? The handles the offense for the Baltimore team.
Oh, you got me. You're talking about with the Colts back when they were the.
Yeah.
No, I'm whipped. I'm whipped.
Because that guy seemed to make a big difference in the team in the last few years.
Oh, hey, by the way, I just got a note from Thomas.
Yeah.
And he said for me to please ask you to stay on the line and not hang up after we're done. And a note from Shorty in L.A. Bill, man, you sound great. You sound great. Smooches. So.
Well, thank you. There's a whole bunch of music coming out, a bunch of tribute stuff, which I have nothing to do with, but one of the guys out here is bringing it out, so I appreciate it, but I'm not planning on leaving, although I do keep having problems with figuring out how old I am, you know, when you...
Some of that stuff comes back. It takes a little longer for some of that stuff to come back than other things. Don't be surprised by that, and don't be disheartened.
When you get over 80, you know, to a little degree, it's like, what? I'm that old? Come on, get out of here. Nah, who's? Why? Robert E. Lee wasn't that old. Lincoln wasn't that old. So how can you be that old, fool? Strange. But yeah, pro football is still interesting. In fact, you don't see much of it around here. That's the funny part.
Wait, you just said over 80. I thought you were just 71.
Well, yeah, I'm just... I'm being facetious.
Okay. I was just checking in. I thought maybe you were running a test on me. I don't do math on the fly very well, and you darn well know it, Bill.
71 is enough. But yeah, I let somebody else down, and I'll hold for.
Okay, I'll put you back on hold, Bill. It's awful good to hear from you, and we're looking forward to the big move tomorrow.
Thank you, sir.
All right, stand by. Put you back on hold. That's our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, messing with my head in or around Cleveland. And Jim says, "Hey, Bill, all my best." Thanks, Jim. So let's finish this up. We didn't get to a whole lot of, we didn't get to any other morons, I think, you know, at least from the perspective of me here. We had all the morans we could stand right in the Kanawha Valley. But this just posted, Ken Ward Jr. has been doing exemplary, real live, honest to goodness, no kidding journalism down at the Gazette. And I'm just going to read straight from his story. This is the first we've had describing the actual scene of the chemical disaster. Ken Moore Jr. writes, when state inspectors arrived at the Freedom Industries tank farm late last Thursday morning, they found a 400 square foot pool of clear liquid had collect, that's 400 square foot, that's what, no more math. A 400 square foot pool of clear liquid had collected outside a white tank marked as number 396. A 4 foot wide stream of the liquid, thicker than water but not as heavy as syrup, yummy, was flowing across the bottom of a containment dike. The flow disappeared right at the joint where the dike's wall connected to its floor. Freedom Industries had set up one cinder block and used one 50-pound bag of some sort of safety absorbent powder to try to block the chemical flow, according to state environmental protection inspectors. This was a Band-Aid approach, said DEP Air Quality Inspector Mike Kolb. It was apparent that this was not an event that had just happened. In an interview Monday with the Gazette, Kolb and DEP Air Quality Engineer Dan Bowerly described discovering the leak of crude MCHM that fouled the drinking water supply that serves hundreds of thousands of West Virginians. They provided new details of what they found at the site and also revealed that the facility had been the subject of at least one odor complaint several years ago that DEP officials determined at the time was unfounded. DEP officials have explained that the Elk River leak last week was identified only after they received odor complaints from area residents about 8:15 a.m. Thursday. When those complaints and notice of the odor from two different DEP employees, you know, that basically says that they noticed the they went to do something about it when they got into work and got a complaint. 8:15. Wonder what happens if a disaster goes down at like 4 in the morning. Well, this probably had been going down at 4 in the morning, hadn't it? When those complaints and notice of the odor from the two different DEP employees came into the agency's Kanawha City headquarters, Kolb and Bowerly were dispatched to investigate. They discovered odors that rated as objectionable under the state standards at spots where Bigley Avenue intersects Westmoreland Drive and Pennsylvania Avenue. You can go and look that up on Google Earth. Based on the smell, the pair say they suspected something had happened at Freedom Industries. Mr. Ward goes on to describe the fact that there had been no inspection of the site since 1991, when it was owned by Pennzoil. You know, before it was purchased and Freedom Industries was incorporated by the convicted cocaine dealer. The DEP, Kolb and Bowerly arrived at the operation shortly after 11 a.m. In the parking lot, they met Kanawha County Fire Coordinator C.W. Sigmund, whose office was also looking into residents' odor complaints. The DEP officials went to the office where Dennis P. Farrell, who identified himself as president of the company, only he wasn't. Why would he do that? Greeted them. They told Farrell about the odors and asked if the facility was having any problems. He said as far as he knew, this was a busy time of year, they were just handling a lot of trailers, and as far as he knew, there weren't any problems. Then they asked Kolb to show them around the facility. When they went outside, an employee asked to speak to Farrell. After that conversation, Farrell told the DEP officials there was a problem and led them to Tank 396. The bastard lied straight up about it. There they found a 400-square-foot pool of chemical that had leaked from the tank into a block containment area. Pressure from the material leaking out of the tank created what DEP officials called an upswelling or an artesian well of this stuff, like a fountain of the poison coming up from the pool. Initially, no one saw the chemical pouring into the Elk River. DEP officials say that part of the river still had a layer of ice on top, which made the spill difficult to notice. Are you screaming yet? I damn near am. Bowerly said, the facility did not give any real attention to containment. Wow. Thanks to Sal and to Betsy and to Randy, all of whom helped throw a few shovelfuls of earth into the hole to help get us out of the hole. Thanks to Waggy over the weekend, who kept that hole from getting terribly, terribly deep, fundraising-wise. Thank you all very much. We'll have the website situation sorted out tomorrow. I want to extend my thanks both to Nicole Sandler for inviting me on her program earlier today, and to Fripp over at Netroots Radio, with whom I did an interview this afternoon. That will be showing up sometime in the very near future. Thank you to both of them for giving a damn about what is apparently a forgotten corner, remains a forgotten corner of America. Thanks, David Gregory. Thanks, Bob Schieffer. Thanks for nothing, George Snuffleupagus, you for-profit media trash, all of you. It just kind of goes to prove we're going to have to build our own media, and this is an attempt in that regard. Thank you, one and all. Back tomorrow with Titanic Tuesday. I don't know how I can get much more Titanic than this, frankly. But I'm sure that somebody will provide it to us. This is a good start. DEP Secretary Randy Huffman said that the facility fell through the cracks. Oh, no. As long as that's what it is. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox for all his help with the website and with all the technical aspects of the studio equipment here. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and acheact.org, acheact.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on The Horn.